and welcome into the Who's On podcast, part of the Sabre Podcast Network. You can catch all your coverage for UVA basketball all season long on thesabre.com. We got the message board, analysis, feature stories. You can follow, subscribe to the Who's On podcast, Apple, Spotify, wherever you find your podcasts. All right, it is here. Basketball season is upon us. John Paul Jones Arena soon will be lit up with the sound of fans once again. November 6th, the opener against Campbell. And for that, we had to have an extra special two-parter for the Who's On podcast, a UVA men's basketball season preview. And for that, got some special first-time guests coming on today. I got Zach Carey, managing editor of Streaking the Lawn, and Cuts from the Corner. You know him from Twitter, and now you can check out his work for cutsfromthecorner.com. Guys, thanks for coming on. Are you ready for this basketball season?
I think so. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having us on, Preston.
Absolutely. All right, we're going to get into it today, but I had to start with just a recap of what happened this offseason, because I don't think there has been a more up and down, crazy offseason in Virginia basketball history. And we'll start with where it happened. You know, Virginia loses by 25 to Colorado State in the first four. Obviously, that starts kind of the talk around this program, and you start hearing the rumblings of maybe Tony Bennett retires after this year, but it kind of passes by and you're like, that's nothing to worry about. We're fine. We're getting into the offseason now. They bring in five new transfers: TJ Power, Jalen Worley, Elijah Saunders, Day-Day Ames, Carter Lang, two freshmen, Jacob Kofi, Ishan Sharma. Then you got some coaching staff changes. Johnny Carpenter leaves, but coming in, Kyle Guy, a very familiar face, coming in a different role, player development role, in a mentor role as he finishes up school at UVA. A lot of talk in the offseason about the new offensive changes that were teased relentlessly by every single recruit that stepped on foot on grounds. And we kind of got to see a little bit of that with the blue-white scrimmage. Then Chance Mallory commits, a huge commitment, in-town guy, something to be celebrated, one of the highest-rated recruits that Tony Bennett's landed in a while. And then the wheels start to fall off. Tony Bennett revisits those thoughts at the Tides Inn in Rappahannock. I don't know if a hotel has gotten a worse rep than the Tides Inn in the past couple of weeks. Tony Bennett retires 3 weeks out from the start of the season. Ron Sanchez is named the interim head coach. And then just this week, on media day, Jalen Worley enters the transfer portal, which led to a little bit of, you know, UVA media day shenanigans, as Zach can attest to. And then just last night on Tuesday, Chance Mallory decommits from UVA. He's still keeping UVA in contention, but, you know, it's been a weird couple weeks for UVA basketball. Guys, Zach, we start with you. Wherever you want to start with all that, it's been an off season to remember.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I don't think I can remember a more turbulent time in the history of UVA basketball. It's probably because I don't remember UVA basketball before Tony Bennett. things are kicking into gear.
How lucky you are!
I know. Believe me, I know. I know. It's been a good run, but yeah. I mean, obviously, Tuesday was a tough day. Just sort of as PR hits. Obviously, the Jalen Worley news. I think that obviously, because he's on the team, will have a more tangible impact on this season and Ron Sanchez, his tenure as the interim head coach. And then, yeah, the Mallory decommitment hurts. Again, that's probably more of just a, you know, that just a, it's a tough look to lose, you know, your one high school recruit. At the same time, it kind of comes with the territory of losing your, you know, Hall of Fame head coach to retirement 3 weeks before the season. So yeah, at least, you know, for Virginia's sake, he is still considering them. But you know, it just sort of puts into picture just how in flux the program is right now.
Hey, real quick, just to touch on Mallory, just, I think this is kind of what was expected from the get go. Like, he doesn't know who the coach is going to be. So right. why would a player stay committed to a place where he doesn't know who the head coach is going to be? And, you know, I don't blame him for kind of evaluating things. I know Chance, you know, going back a ways just from covering him in high school, and he's a good kid, good head on his shoulders. it kind of just makes sense. And I, you know, maybe he comes back to UVA, maybe he doesn't. But just with the turbulent nature of what has happened the past, I mean, for years, you could argue that UVA was the most steady program in the ACC, just, you know, not only on the court, but just continuity wise. And now everything just kind of gets thrown into, you know, a blender the last couple of weeks with Tony Bennett's decision to retire. Cuts, what stands out to you from this past offseason?
Well, you know, it's funny because that loss was such a visible and glaring one, and it had the potential to go one of two ways. But the story for me this offseason was they looked like they rebounded pretty well. And I thought this is going to be a story of, okay, this is the spark for some change, right? This is the spark for some of these offensive innovations we've been talking about, potentially examine some of the ways we've done certain things with the program in terms of, you know, who we've played and how we've utilized them. And you know, the fact that they were able to land a pretty encouraging transfer portal, you know, leaning into potentially NIL a little bit more in terms of, you know, potentially that was one of the things that, you know, may have pushed Tony in this direction. Who knows? But, you know, I was encouraged by the direction it was heading. And I thought that it was exciting that they were willing to make some of the changes. Or at least seem to be starting to make some of the changes that, you know, certainly I've been in, and a lot of folks have been talking about for a while now. But then obviously the Tony Bennett retirement decision throws a little bit of a wrench in all that. So, you know, now we're sort of in a position where I think we're trying to see how some of that all plays out. Like, I agree with your point, you know, Chance Mallory, you know, what else is he going to do, right? There's still so much uncertainty, you know, can't blame him for, you know, and honestly, you know, I think the visibility of it, you know, the announcement is less than ideal, which I would have hoped, you know, I would have personally as a fan, I would have hoped, hey, you know, he you know, just kind of doesn't sign, plays it close to the vest, sees what happens, wait and sees, and then maybe opens it up. But, you know, I understand that. And you know, I think now we're waiting to see what happens with Ron Sanchez. There's a lot of uncertainty there. How much is this going to be his own team versus how much is he going to run it in Tony's image? I think that's the thing I'm going to be most curious about this coming season.
Yeah, I think now it's just get down to basketball. All the off the court stuff, I guess. I mean, who knows? We got a week, we got a little less than a week until the season actually starts. But you know, a lot of the off the court stuff can kind of get out of the way now, and hopefully you can just focus on basketball these first couple of weeks. And yeah, I do want to start with just after the Tony Bennett news, it feels like national media wise, it's not been media around the program or people that really know the program. It's just been kind of a national media narrative that they're ready. They got the shovels out. They're ready. They're digging the grave. They have been ready for this day to come. As soon as Tony Bennett was out of the way, they're like, it's time to start digging. And I even listened to one of my favorite NBA podcasts right before I came on here today, and they're talking about Ryan Dunn's success in the NBA, and they're saying, well, Virginia's just not going to produce the same kind of players anymore because Tony Bennett's not the coach. I'm like, well, that seems a little premature. Like, can we at least like give the new guy a shot before we start digging the grave? And I talked to this about a lot of people. Do y'all gotten the same feeling, just like everyone's we're done, like Virginia, that was a cute little run that you made for 15 years. It's over.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to follow a legend, right? And so I think someone like Ron Sanchez is walking into a tough position. I mean, I think, you know, fortunately for him, he sort of gets a year to prove himself. So, you know, put it on the court and we'll see. But yeah, I think, you know, what I've gathered is some think that he's going to be more like Tony Light. And, you know, is Tony Light, you know, the same as a potential Hall of Famer, and I think that's where you start to see some of that feedback.
Yeah, I yeah, that definitely Tony Light sounds about right. And he had to make changes, and they were already making changes, offensively, and kind of just how they ran the program transfer wise, kind of the guys they were going after. But all right, UVA Media Day earlier this week, had a couple interesting notes coming out of that. We'll see if y'all, you know, picked anything else out. But the first one I want to start with is the player-led meetings after Tony Bennett, because I think everyone's been kind of wondering ever since the announcement. The only people we hadn't really heard from were the players themselves, and I had heard from, you know, families and some of the other players, that, you know, It was a shock, of course, but they kind of rebounded and they've kind of rallied around each other. Obviously, that might fall on some deaf ears now that you see a guy like Jalen Worley go into the transfer portal. But the player-led meetings that we've heard about, Isaac McNealy, Tane Murray were big in kind of organizing those. TJ Power, I posted a soundbite from him for Media Day. He was another guy which it was very vocal, which is incredible, kind of because it's his first year in the program. He hasn't played a game in a Virginia uniform, and he's only a sophomore. He's only played 1 year of college basketball. But just kind of, Zach, your reaction, just kind of hearing about kind of how the players have reacted to Tony Bennett's decision.
Yeah, I mean it's hard to fault them obviously for the shock or for any sort of emotions that they would have. I mean, talking to guys, a lot of them said like this is why I came to Virginia was to play for Tony Bennett, and they were upfront about that, and that's genuine. At the same time, I think it was IMAX specifically who noted, Ron Sanchez's point that the assistants were who recruited them. Like this is still the Virginia staff. This is still those guys that wanted them to come to this program, and I think the player-led meetings, like that's only a positive because in these moments, like or in this moment, what you're most afraid of is just the wheels falling off and just it being like, okay, Tony's gone. We don't have faith in Coach Sanchez because he's just not Tony, all due respect to him. And it's 3 weeks before the season, and we're basically a completely new team with like two or maybe three contributors coming back from last year. And just all of a sudden, like they just can't come together as a basketball team just because there's so much. And obviously the Jalen Worley news contributes to that, another experienced player and a potential leader on this team leaving. So guys stepping up is obviously like that's important and that's critical. And I think that if they can sort of pass that first bar of, okay, like we've sort of absorbed the shock of Bennett leaving, and can now actually move forward as a group looking to win basketball games rather than necessarily looking at it as, okay, like this season is now just a wash. I need to look elsewhere. I don't know what this is going to be like in 6 months, and sort of like letting the outside noise get the best of them. So it's obviously like, I mean, they're probably going to say that they feel good at Media Day. Like, who really knows how things are going on the inside, but player-led meetings for what is as Virginia as guys with experience in the Virginia program go is very inexperienced. So sort of starting to come together in that way is encouraging.
Yeah, I mean, I think it speaks to the culture as well of the team that they're on the same page and able to deliver that message. What I would say is it's going to be, Coach Sanchez mentioned it's going to be a journey, and I think it's going to be because, this isn't going to be a, get your, you're ready to go at the start of the season. It's going to be sort of a season long, or certainly the early part of the season long, where as soon as you start to run into adversity, and they will, how do you rebound from that? So, that's going to be the thing to really keep an eye on is, can they draw on each other and build on that over the course of the season and build something strong, or is that something that's going to be sort of in the back of their minds the rest of the year?
Yeah. Well, I think the little piece of new news that we got from the media day was no red shirts this year. Jacob Kofi, Ishan Sharma, the two freshmen, they will play. I asked Ron Sanchez about that because I just wrote an article on those two guys and kind of the unique skill sets that they bring to this rotation this year. And I kind of went back and looked. You can find that article on thesaber.com, but I went back and looked. This is only the fifth time since Tony Bennett arrived at UVA that they have not had a red shirt player. First time since 2021. Unique. How much do you see both these guys being in the rotation and being, factors this year? Cuts, we'll start with you.
Sure. Well, so just we so Elijah Gertrude is redshirting, but a medical redshirt.
Yeah, that's true.
But yeah, non-medical redshirt. Yeah, I think both are going to be involved. I think if you had asked me when Coach Bennett was still at the helm, I would have thought Ishan Sharma would have been more involved. But I think with Coach Sanchez, I think Jacob Kofi, we're going to see a lot of time from him. I think we'll see time from both. But it looks like and sounds like they really want to get Kofi into the mix. He's featured heavily in a lot of the rotations. He popped at the blue-white scrimmage. He's shown well in some of the other scrimmages. I think they view him as a lot of having a lot of talent and upside, and I think they're going to be working to try to fit him into their lineups and get him into play early and often, and hopefully throughout the season. So I think that shifted. I think if anything, one of the things I'm starting to notice is I think it's possible that Sanchez will use his bigs a little bit differently than Coach Bennett did, in terms of just not out of necessity, but out of just kind of giving that opportunity to get out there and run and kind of learn from the playing experience. I see that happening with Kofi quite a bit. I think Ishan Sharma is going to get his opportunities as well. I think they're going to play him, and that's going to probably depend a lot more on how those around him are playing, and just how he's shooting and how comfortable he looks with the speed of the game. So I think there's certainly an opportunity for him to earn minutes as well. But I'm leaning more toward Kofi at this point, playing a bigger impact earlier and throughout the season.
Yeah, and I'd just add to that, I think the interesting thing with Kofi and sort of his minutes is just how the lineups work out. Like how much, and I know Cuts has opinions on this, how much they play small ball with Elijah Saunders at the five. Obviously Blake Buchanan is projected to be the starting center on day one. I think Kofi is probably squarely listed as the backup center right now, ahead of Anthony Robinson. And I mean, talking to I one thing I like to do at Media Day is sort of ask guys, like who in practice has been the toughest guy to guard and who's been the toughest guy to beat. And Saunders said that Kofi's been the toughest guy for him to beat, one-on-one, and sort of talked about his strength, and just like his ability as a shot blocker, and he's sort of been surprised by that as a freshman. So, if Coach Bennett were here, I think he'd be pretty excited to hear that answer. I agree with Cuts that I think Kofi can will have a real role on this team, and that he's one guy that the Sanchez sort of Sanchez being the interim will he'll benefit from that. And then, yeah, I completely agree on the Sharma point. Like, just is he the hot hand? Like how is he shooting from three relative to an Andrew Rohde, to a Tane Murray? I think the Jalen Worley transfer might open things up just a little bit for him, just in the sense that they're probably not going to be playing two point guards on the floor very often. So that's just one guy kind of in that guard rotation that the Sharma doesn't have to get minutes over. Yeah, no, I think it's exciting. It's exciting to have two freshmen that could very well be a part of an 8 or 9 man rotation in ACC play.
Now, I was going to say, it'll be interesting just also because one thing I've heard a lot of too is they're focusing on, they want to get their best players on the court, whatever that looks like, right? And I think historically that's looked a little different, but now I think they're viewing, TJ Power, Elijah Saunders, Kofi, and Blake Buchanan as four of their best players. So I think yes, they're going to play small, and we'll certainly talk about that, but I think there's also the potential that they're going to be playing big as well, which is a little different than what they've done recently. So that'll be interesting to see as well.
It's interesting. Just I think what makes Kofi so ready to play so early, because there's only been in the last decade one big man that's played more than 15 minutes a game as a true freshman. That's Blake Buchanan last year. What makes him so ready to take on that kind of role is because his size. He is so big. He's a lot taller, a lot bigger than I thought he would be coming in, and he's so strong. I think back to that scrimmage when he bully balled TJ Power for a dunk, like just pushed him out of the way. And if you can do that, I know TJ Power is not an imposing force down there, but he's an ACC basketball player. Like if you can do that, it kind of sends a message. I do think Kofi's in line for a big role this year. And it was interesting asking Blake Buchanan, because these two guys actually played against each other in AAU, because both from the Pacific Northwest. He says that he has not been playing against Kofi in practice, which would show me, because he says they're playing different positions, that maybe Kofi's more of a backup to Saunders than more of a natural backup to Buchanan, which is kind of interesting. I think, maybe it's playing Kofi with Saunders on the court when they go to those small ball lineups, which in the end wouldn't be that much smaller because it would just be Kofi out there instead of Buchanan. But we did hear Ron Sanchez talk about, using more small ball lineups this year. That's something that's worked well for UVA in the past, when you've had guys like, Braxton Key and even, to a certain extent, Mamadou Diakite, with subbing in for Jack Sull during that title run. Elijah Saunders expect to play a lot at the five. He's listed at 6'8", 240. Really strong guy. So I mean, that's kind of new for UVA. A lot of strong people out there, between Kofi and Saunders, and then the weight that Buchanan's put on. How much do you think we'll see small ball this year?
You go, Cuts. I know you got opinions here.
I think we'll see it. I think we've seen it the past few years. I think they've liked to go in that direction. Saunders is interesting in that he offers a lot of strength down there along with the shooting. One of the things, because I do a film dive into all of our incoming transfers, is I do think he tends to struggle with that true center position defensively. I am, as to your point earlier, I'm interested in the emergence of Kofi as a potential backup center and power forward as well, but backup center in a potential small ball type lineup because he can shoot the three as well. He's not going to hunt it, but he can knock it down. So if you're talking small ball and Kofi's part of that, I'm much more excited. If you're talking small ball and it's Power and Saunders at the four and five, which I think we are going to see some of this year, I'm much more concerned about the defense. I do think this is where the loss of Jalen Worley starts to play in as well, because when you have a 6'7" point guard, if you're playing small, he's not the strongest rebounder, but his length in the passing lane, his ability to crash back down and just sort of get involved in plays can help you there as well, and sort of help you with a collective team size. Yeah, I think we're going to see it. My hope is that it's successful when we do, but I have a thought that as the season progresses, we're probably going to either see it less and less, or if we do see it, it's going to be with Kofi at that five position.
Yeah, I'll just add, the Worley point is very well taken, because you go from sort of having three forward sized guys on the court to having two, and I think that the question for TJ Power is, can you sort of mask his maybe a little bit lacking foot speed or just agility to get the benefit that he gives you on offense as an elite shooter. And we've seen UVA kind of struggle with playing guys like Power in a small ball lineup in past seasons. I mean, we can go back to Ben Vanderplas and Jaden Gardner, who are obviously two very good players, but just didn't really fit that well together because of the defensive liability there. Granted, if Saunders can sort of man the five, or at least take on the more threatening of the front court players in that lineup, your life gets a little bit easier, but not having Worley to potentially move around to different guys and sort of the defensive versatility that comes with that could be tough. And yeah, we'll make that lineup a little bit, that super small lineup even smaller.
We've used the small ball, especially in recent seasons, as like an offense defense trade-off. Trying to find the right amount of shooters and then see what you can make do with defense in terms of the system being excellent, but maybe not necessarily having those same rim protectors. And my hope is that we'll move toward more toward not necessarily needing to play small to get the offense that we need. So hopefully we'll see that more from this lineup this year.
Yeah, and talking to Elijah Saunders about this, I mean, he was salivating at the chance to play the small ball five because what it means for him offensively. I mean, just being able to take advantage of some of those matchups. And so it does definitely seem like it's a little bit better offensively at this point. We'll see defensively. He's definitely strong enough to hold up against some of the big men in the ACC. It's just, can they figure out the rest of the defense around him? And y'all kind of dipping into that. We'll get into that in the mailbag, what Jalen Worley's loss means. But last thing from Media Day is just we obviously have talked so much about the offensive changes and more adaptations to the system. And it was interesting hearing what Ron Sanchez had to say about it, because I think it was the most specific that any coach has been this offseason about what they're exactly changing. He's talking about, a lot about just getting the ball up faster, as opposed to, taking, I think he said 6 seconds. We're getting up there in 3 seconds or 4 seconds, just to get into things a little bit quicker. Having McNeely sprint hard to the 3-point line, getting the five man to run straight down the court, run hard at the rim in transition. So just a couple little differences like that. I think there's also some stuff that they're doing in their sets that's different. Obviously, in the scrimmage, we didn't see any of the traditional blocker mover offense. Just what have y'all made, Zach? You can start with just kind of what you've seen offensively.
The answers from Media Day and just this entire offseason have been kind of funny to me, because they're saying the buzzwords that you'd want to hear, like space, pace, freedom, and so they're talking about things that I think, or concepts that would indicate movement in the right direction, and seeing what I saw, in the blue white scrimmage, I think that there's improvement, or there's a little bit more space, sort of being utilized, and they're not sort of just reverting to those base offenses that they've relied on so heavily over the last couple of years. At the same time, like the philosophy of the offense is not changing. I think like sort of how they achieve that philosophy via the scheme may be slightly different. But I sort of, I was asking individual players, and like Christian Bliss was sort of talking about, more freedom to make plays. So is Desmond Roberts. And then talking to Tane Murray, who's obviously the longest tenured UVA player, he was sort of just saying like, oh, like Ron Sanchez, oh, we're just going to push the tempo a little bit more. And so I'm curious just how much it's tempo versus schematic changes. You note that they didn't run sides, at least in its true form in the scrimmage. And I know Cutts was there and can talk to it as well. But I think typically what they did, they used similar actions with sort of that pin down screen for a guard with a big, and they just had the opposite big rather than setting the same pin down action or rotating with flares on the opposite side. They just had sort of the big either at the elbow if it's a non-shooter like Blake Buchanan or Anthony Robinson, or they had the big sort of like step out to the break line, and then the other guard sort of in the corner, which at least sort of lends itself to that spacing concept that they're going to still run some similar things, but maybe just not with, sort of congestion on the interior to allow for more playmaking. And there was more than that. Like they were using more zoom actions, more dribble handoffs. They had some horn sets that were kind of fun to see. And like in a big lineup with maybe Kofi and Buchanan, that could be fun. Or even in small ball, if you have shooters and you can run different guys to the rim. So I think that there's definitely something to it. My question is, do they stick to these sort of like conceptual changes if things don't go so swimmingly at the beginning of the year, because maybe they don't quite have the talent that's going to be able to take advantage of that freedom immediately? And sort of how quick are they to revert back to some things that they sort of trust? And that's a good question for Sanchez v. Bennett. Like is Sanchez going to revert back as quickly to sort of his staples or to the program staples as Bennett would?
As they say, everyone's got a plan until you get punched in the mouth.
Exactly.
Yeah, no, those are great points. I was thinking when you were saying that, Zach, about the 2020, 2021 season when they had that like really short-lived five-out offense, and then that lasted like a couple of seconds, and then they went right back to blocker mover. I think you wonder, how much of this is really going to be different. But I was encouraged at the blue-white scrimmage in that it was a different offense. And yes, there were some similar sets, but it was different concepts. I mean, there were, yes, zoom actions, there were dribble handoffs, there were, cuts through the lane at different times that you wouldn't see. And it looked like there was a good amount of read and react happening, a lot of sort of like reversal of court. And so I think if anything, it's going to be less predictable. Defenses aren't going to come into the game like having already scouted us for, 15 years and know exactly what we're going to do and be able to anticipate our motions, right? So like even if that's going to give some more freedom and creativity just to adapt within these new actions from our players. And I think you're going to see some players like Andrew Rohde maybe be a little more successful in this type of offense because of his ability to anticipate and make solid passes. So yeah, I'm interested to see how long they stick with it, but I was encouraged to see that during the scrimmage they really pretty much only ran this, which makes sense. I mean, they're trying it out. And I do expect we'll probably see some of the other offenses at some point during the season. But I think this will give them sort of an opportunity to play in a way that they haven't before. Not necessarily anything dramatically changing, but just in terms of being unpredictable.
I had a good conversation with Isaiah Wilkins on this podcast a few, I think it was almost a month ago now, just about kind of everything basketball related. And he had to be vague about the offense because that's what everyone's being that's what everyone's doing. But just kind of about pace of play. Obviously Virginia ranked dead last in the country in pace of play last year. But like who was ranked just a couple spots ahead of them was UConn.
UConn,
They are 301 compared to Virginia at 362. So you don't have to be Alabama to win basketball games in this day in college basketball. But if you get the ball across the half court a little quicker and you get into your sets a little bit quicker, like it can change things enough that the offense can be efficient. I mean, we've seen this Virginia offense be one of the most efficient offenses in the country in the past, and so it is possible. Let's get into the mailbag now. I kind of broke it up. This is part one, and it's a lot of Jalen Warley questions. So I've kind of lumped all the Jalen Warley stuff at the front of it. All right. So we'll start here with Bladavira on Twitter asking, or X, whatever you want to call it these days,
Twitter.
asking, there we go, Twitter forever. If Worley stays at UVA while redshirting, is he still on scholarship? Will he sit on the bench? I'll take that one first. He's already off the website. He's not on the roster anymore, so he will not be on the bench. You won't see him anymore. It was actually funny. The red flag started going up for me when I left Media Day, went in to get in my car, and Jalen Worley was walking out of the building when they were supposed to have practice. So that's kind of when my red flag started going up. Things can happen. Maybe there's a class. I have no idea. So I didn't put too much thought into it. His intention is to transfer, redshirt wherever he's transferring, to spend a year in that program and then play next year. So that's basically it. But let's get into the next one from Weird Al Who on the Saber message board. Again, great place all season long to have some good conversation. Is there any one player on the roster besides Data Ames that the staff feels can defend some of these ACC point guards for extended minutes? Zach, if you want to tackle that one first.
What the staff thinks and what I think
Very
maybe are
different.
slightly different. I think it's probably Ames. If you're talking about like shifty point guards looking to create, I think they'd probably tell you Isaac McNealy is another guy that could do that. I don't have a lack of faith in IMAC. I just think it's something he hasn't done very much before because he's been able to play with Keay Clark and Reese Beekman for the first 2 years of his career. This is where you wish you had Elijah Gertrude, and sort of like his ability to heat up the ball. I mean, I'm scrolling through the roster right now. It's a point well taken, that Ames is sort of one of those shiftier guys, and after that there's a bit of a fall off. At the same time, this is why you have the pack line defense. This is why you sort of you run a defense that helps to the ball, and that can help adjacent and help on the backside. So yeah, I think Ames is that guy. I think Worley was gonna be one of those guys, maybe not in the same mold, but just with his length, that's an area where he could have helped there. So it'll be interesting. That's honestly not though where I'm most concerned about them defensively.
Yeah. I was so excited to watch Jalen Worley play on the ball defense this year. He was just going to be such a great matchup for so many of the talented players that we've faced there. It is primarily going to be Ames this year for certain. I would throw out, and I think the backup is actually more likely going to be Andrew Rohde, would be my guess. He defended the point quite a bit at St. Thomas, and I think some people hearing this might recoil a little bit. But a lot of his defense last year was, and some of the lapses were more off the ball. He's actually a much better on ball defender than he is off ball, and we'll see how much of his off ball defense was impacted by any potential injuries last year or not. But on ball, he's actually pretty can be pretty effective at times. When he was with St. Thomas, he guarded Ryan Nembhard, who was playing with Creighton at the time, and really gave him a hard time. There were some quality players in the Summit, Trenton Massner, Max Asemus. He had a harder time with Asemus because of the foot speed. But was actually pretty effective at times with his length of just kind of staying in front and bothering shots and pretty active hands. So if he's called on more regularly there, I think he's probably our second best option. And I think he could hold up, especially in the context of the pack line, decently enough, at least.
This is by far where, the Jalen Worley news hit me the hardest, just because
Yep.
seeing him in that scrimmage, I mean, we all remember he I think it was Bliss or someone, he turned over at half court, started a fast break, and I was like, his length and his ability to defend on the ball is really what this
He's
team's gonna miss the most. Just the versatility he is as a defender as well at 6'7". You think of some of the guards in the ACC that you're gonna have to face this year, RJ Davis, Elliot Cadeau, Seth Trimble, just on UNC alone. And then you've got, Tyrese Proctor and Hunter Salas, a bunch of other really good guards in this conference. And that's kind of why I was like, all right, you got Worley to throw on whoever the other team's best guard is. And then you've got Saunders throw whoever the tougher forward matchup is, so that leaves Power theoretically with an easier matchup. And now that kind of disappears a little bit. Day-Day Ames, really good athlete, really quick. So you're hoping that he can stay with some of these guys. But that kind of leads right into the next one. What's the biggest unknown for this team now that Worley is in the portal, offense or defense? That's from Bill in Seville on Twitter.
I'd probably go. I mean, what impact the Worley news has versus what the biggest question is, I think they're still different things. Like, I think the Worley thing throws the defense into more of an unknown than it previously was. I still have more questions about how the offense is going to work in context of the lineups. And sort of as we've talked about before, like, can they be successful on offense in a bigger lineup that's going to help them defensively? Obviously, everything complements each other. I think with Worley, though, that hurts your defense, and as a result, means that you might have less flexibility to then be able to sort of play around offensively.
Yeah, I agree. It hurts the defense the most. I mean, one other thing that I think is overlooked a little bit is Worley's coming from Florida State and they switched everything. So teams would actually just proactively set ball screens at the beginning of a possession to get Worley off the ball and sort of cycle him back within their defense. And he ended up playing off the ball or under the rim a lot. But when he actually was on the ball, which was more rare than you would hope, he was just he just wreaked havoc. And I think that one of the reasons I was excited having him play for us is that, we're not going to do that. He's just going to be able to shadow someone the entire game or would have been able to. So I definitely think that the impact of losing Morley is bigger to the defense. I don't think you have that stopper at the guard position now that we would have. I agree with Zach that the offense is the bigger uncertainty as a whole in terms of what's that going to look like and how are we going to execute. But in terms of Morley's impact, defense for sure.
All right, next one. Do you think Ron Sanchez was choosing Day Day over Jalen for playing time and that caused him to transfer? Won't get into that from CBC Harp on Twitter. Won't get too much into that because we don't really know what Ron's conversations were. We knew what Who's Got Next is reported, is that Day Day was going to be picked as the starter this season over Jalen. But just, I guess, let's take it in the context of this. Who do you think is the best option at point guard, now going forward? Obviously, Ron Sanchez said it was going to be by committee. And now it obviously seems like Day-Day Ames is going to be the starter, but how much playing time does Andrew Rhode get at the point guard position or Christian Bliss cuts? What's your take on the point guard position?
So it's definitely going to be Day-Day, and I think he's going to be a big minutes logger at that position this year. I anticipate Rhodey will probably be his backup based on where they've rotated him in. I think there was a lot of hope that it would be Bliss, and maybe it still will be, especially as the season progresses. But we haven't seen him there in the rotations. He didn't play in the most recent scrimmage in the blue-white scrimmage. He looked a little just looked a little slower. I'm not sure if he's 100% in terms of his health right now. I don't want to speculate too much on that, but I could see him being that answer long term and over the course of the season. If he can step into that role, I think that will benefit us greatly. But at least initially, I imagine it'll be a lion's share to Day-Day and then Rhodey backing him up.
Yeah, similar thoughts from me. I think this team at its best has Christian Bliss playing minutes, but obviously, he needs to be good enough to play those minutes. Just because I think that he has one of the higher ceilings of those guys. Yeah, Ames is gonna dominate that spot. Maybe not dominate, but he's gonna play a lot of the minutes at that spot. And it's really interesting because I think even a week ago I was sort of thinking like Ames, like. Not fringe, like maybe fringe rotation guy, like backup point guard, 10 minutes, 12 minutes. And now all of a sudden he is like the Reese Beekman successor, which is kind of a scary prospect. I wasn't super high on Ames when they got him, honestly. I think that you're projecting a lot with him, and maybe that projection works out, and maybe Sanchez has seen something that he likes in Ames. But I think that he lowers your floor as that starter relative to Worley, and I don't quite know if the offensive creation that he's going to provide and having a little bit more of a shot than Worley, not a ton, not a great shooter necessarily, but he at least takes threes. I don't know how much more of a benefit they're going to get from that relative to the strengths that Worley had that we've detailed.
I when Data Ames came on, and it was kind of a weird recruitment too, because it was like, all right, they're gonna take Data Ames, they're not gonna take Data Ames. Like, it was kind of there was he was the last one in the door pretty much. And yeah, I really had penciled in Jalen Worley as the starting point guard. I just liked what he brought defensively, and I thought he's at least gonna be able to get to the rim and be able to kick and distribute that way. And I still think to some extent, and Isaiah Wilkins made this point to me, was that by committee doesn't necessarily mean just who's actually playing point guard, but I think the creation responsibility is going to be kind of distributed through the offense. We saw a little bit of TJ Power doing it in the high post. And I think, maybe the ball goes into Isaac McNealy's hands a little bit more often if maybe he has some more creation ability this year. I don't think it's going to be necessarily, we've had this steady line of procession at the point guard position from, London Perrantes to Ty Jerome to Kihei Clark to Reese Beekman over the years. I don't think it's going to look like that with Day Day Ames, but he's going to get a lion's share of the minutes just because he's the guy right now. Last one for this mailbag part. We're going to wrap up part one on this, and I don't know if there's a good answer to this, but Guinea Pettiford, from my email, asked, "What win does Ron Sanchez need to get in order to get the full-time job? Is there one win?"
No, there's not one win. I don't know if this was maybe how many wins does he need, but certainly not just one win unless it's, a Final Four win or a national championship. I think that's going to be the question. And I was having a discussion about this the other day. I think it's going to be hard. Like, making a case that, hey, I'm the guy when we're going to open potentially, or we've said we're going to open a national search. I don't think that there's one win that answers that. I think you have to do your due diligence and look at all the options out there and then consider the body of work this year and make a decision.
I'll say not that it's going to get him the job. Beating Duke at home would be pretty sweet for Ron
Especially this
Sanchez.
Duke team. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. Especially this Duke team. If you can, and I granted there a lot more has to come with that. But if you want something to point to that's not postseason success, I think that will have to be a component of it, obviously. But that's the big ticket item on UVA's schedule this year.
I think the one win that would have Carlo Williams in the tunnel with the contract would be an NCAA tournament win for the first time since 2019.
Maybe.
I think for the most part, I mean, it's been a long time. It's been something that has evaded this team over the last few years since 2019. So I think getting any kind of postseason success, I think, would go a long way. All right, we're going to wrap up part one here. We got a lot more coming up. We got more mailbag questions. We also got our season predictions we're going to get into. So you catch that next part coming up in a little bit. We'll see you here on the Who's On podcast.